to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 13. As we shared, Jeremiah is relevant to us because of the pending invasion by Nebuchadnezzar, actually three times. And in the process, Israel and Judah, Jerusalem in this case, are not listening at all. And in the process, you have the movement of a God's man trying to, and God's people trying to go, and in a situation where everything is going downhill, and to try to stay on stable ground and be a testimony to them. But it's very draining, and they try to tell them, you need to fix things, you need to change things, but they just weren't doing it. So now, in order to get chapter 13, actually there's five warnings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in a row. God puts them in a row. And in the process of the first warning, what are we looking at? Well, we're looking at, it, to make it relevant, think of where we are now, Romans 13 and that. Our salvation is nearer now than yesterday. Secondly, and in this case, the tribulation coming up with all of the volatility, the Israel, the Iranian things going up in the air to tell Israel, Israel is damned and doomed, and they up they went. And now, so in the process of that, and just did it, I guess. So now, here's great movement all over the world, in our country, and every country, more or less. Now, so here's the tribulation coming up. Now, is our country conscious of what's where we're headed? Question. Is the world conscious of where we're headed? Now, chapter 13. Jeremiah 13. Thus saith the Lord unto me, verse 13, go and get thee a linen girdle, and put it on their loins, on thy loins, and put it not in water. Now he's going to go, remember, Jeremiah is a priest. He's from a priestly family. Prophets wore leather, waist, skirt kind of thing. But priest wore linen. And Jeremiah is a priest. And he has linen on, which is appropriate because he's representing God on a particular illustration that he's going to show Israel. And in the process, you'll notice in verse 13 that it shall not be put in water. Now, why is that? Because when they made a new linen garment, they would wash it to make it soft. If they didn't wash it, it was sort of harsh a bit. He was to put the linen garment on, unsoiled, untouched, in its purity. That's what he was to do, to put that linen girdle on. Just think of your waist and like a little shorts or belt, a waistband going around the skin is what's important. And so, verse 2, and so I got a girdle according to the word of the Lord and put it on my loins. So Jeremiah did what he was told. And the word of the Lord came unto me a second time after I put the girdle on. And verse 4, take the girdle that thou hast got, which is upon thy loins, arise, go to Euphrates, and hide it there in a rock, in a hole of the rock. So now he's going to go. He has this assignment. He's going to go and take this girdle that he's wearing, this loincloth, and he's going to take that all the way to the Euphrates, and he's going to go and take it off and hide it there in a rock. Now, and so looking at that, you need just a little help with that maybe. Here is the word Euphrates. That's the Euphrates River. Now, you would remember, I'm sure, in Joshua chapter 1, verse 2, 3, and verse 4 in particular, the boundaries of Israel are given in verse 4. And if you want to go east, that way, want to go east, you're going to go all the way to the Euphrates River, because that's the boundary for the land of Israel. Now, so Israel, what are you going to do, Jeremiah? Well, I'm going to go, God has sent me to the Euphrates River. And in the process of going to the Euphrates River, I'm going to go over where Babylon is. I'm going to go over there. And in the process, so in case you are thinking, that you could say, well, Babylon doesn't have any rocky, had no rocky on the Euphrates, Babylon. There's no rocky ledges, but just a little further north, going up the Euphrates, there is ledges, etc. So we're going to hide it in the rocks. And he's going there. Now, and you say, well, he can't. That's so far. Well, that's true. It depends on where you go. You're talking 300, 350 miles you're going to go. But when you think of Elijah, we did Elijah, remember, in Kings, and Elijah went all the way from Jezreel all the way down to Mount Sinai. That's 300-something miles. Wow. So that's what they did. And Jeremiah, because of Jehoiakim, the king, he did whatever, and Jeremiah had to exit for a little while, and so the timing and everything is there. And we know what? Well, Nebuchadnezzar, you might as well look at that one. Jeremiah chapter 39. So we know the boundary is there, and we know that when Jeremiah went over that way, Nebuchadnezzar came in contact with him, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to look out for him. So when you read, picking up chapter 39, verse 11, now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, take him and look well to him and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee. So Nebuchadnezzar must have met, when Jeremiah went all the way over there, he must have met him there. Also, when we're looking at it, you say, well, that's, people try to say, well, that can't, it's so far, and it isn't practical. Well, it depends. What is the context and the Euphrates River? And when you find a word, always the word, first word is where it's used, and follow through. It is always going to be that way. Usually a word stays the same in the same book. So here's Jeremiah. And we're going to look at Egypt, Euphrates again. Euphrates isn't talking about a little town north of Ananoth. And it isn't talking, some other will try to say, if you just change this letter of the Hebrew, you could go down south of Jerusalem. And you find another little town. Bethlehem used to have a name like that before it was Bethlehem. So you could have all of those things, but you don't need to do them. You're hunting for something. You're trying to make something simpler than it needs to be. So here in Jeremiah chapter 46, now I'm looking at Euphrates River, so I'm interested. Is it Euphrates in Jerusalem, near Jerusalem? Or is it Euphrates, Euphrates? There's one Euphrates River. And chapter 46 and verse 2. Against Egypt, against the army of Pharaoh, Necho, king of Egypt, which was by the river Euphrates in Carchemish, which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, smote in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah. Verse 10. For this day, for this is the day of the Lord of hosts, a day of vengeance, that he may avenge him on his adversaries, and the sword shall devour, and it shall be satiated, and make drunk with the blood of the Lord God of hosts. Lord God of hosts hath a sacrifice in the north country by the river Euphrates. Over in chapter 51. And picking up, if I may, in verse 51 and in verse 60. 51:60. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon, thou shalt see and shalt read all these words. Then thou shalt say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither shall man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it, and cast it into the midst of the Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and it shall not rise from the evil which I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary thus far. Thus are the words of Jeremiah. So we're all talking about Euphrates and Babylon, and it's the same river, same city there. So now back over to chapter 13. Now remember, as we're going, why are you sending him there? And with this linen girdle, hang on. Because why? Where is Jerusalem and Judah headed? He's been saying it all the way down the line. You won't trust me. Nebuchadnezzar is going to destroy your city, and you're all going into captivity. Where? Babylon. Babylon. That's where you're headed. Are you going to give him a message? I'm going to give him a visual message, a illustration. Now, keep going and we'll see it in the light of that. Now, I don't want to, so many things. Remember now, well, we'll pick it up. Jeremiah chapter 13 and verse 5. So I went and hid it. So I went and hid it by Euphrates, as the Lord commanded me. And it came to pass, after many days, that the Lord said unto me, arise, go to Euphrates, and take the girdle from whence which I commanded thee to hide it there. In other words, you're going to go, you're going to leave it, we don't know how long, and you're going to go back, and you're going to go and dig it up. Dig it up. Verse 7. Then I went to Euphrates and digged, and took the girdle from the place where I had hid it. And behold, the girdle was marred. It was profitable for nothing. It was destroyed, marred, corrupt, ruined, brought to ruin, reduced to ruin, corruption, to crush something, to destroy something. And here's this linen garment, untreated, all rotten. Down, dig it up, and it's all rotten near the water and all of that in the dirt. And he digs it up, and it's unwearable, unusable. And you'll note, please, the end of verse 7. It was marred. It was profitable. The little verb there, it has to do with not the word good, the word benefit, to be fit, to be successful, and then put a word N-O-T in front of it. Not good, not successful, not benefit, not fit, not useful. The garment is no use anymore. You throw it away. Now, so that's the object sitting there, you're looking at it. In verse 8, well, the word marred, well, we'll go back to that. And thus the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord. Now, God, you're going to help him. Jeremiah needs to know what's the object of this rotten linen garment. Thus saith the Lord, after this manner I will mar, there's your little verb again, the pride of Judah, the great pride of Judah, the great haughtiness, elevation, self-exaltation. I am going, what do? They're very, very proud. Proud. I'm going to mar their pride. They have a very great pride. Now, what are you going to do with them, God? I'm going to teach him a lesson. I'm going to send him into captivity. Not to the Assyrians. They're idolatrous enough. I'm going to send them to Babylon, the center of idolatry, the center of a proud people that will not be humbled. I'm going to send the proud Israelites to the middle of the Babylonian Empire, and they're going to live there for 70 years, and after that, many of them do. But you remember, after 70 years, Israel returned, Ezra, Nehemiah, and all that. And the Jewish people, Israel as a nation, has never repeated the idolatry after that lesson of 70 years. They never went back to it. Israel isn't idolatrous today. Not like as we would think of. They don't copy Mormonism and Hinduism or something else. They don't do that. They don't do it. God taught them a lesson. Now that's the little point. Now, Jeremiah chapter 13. Verse 10, this evil people which refuse to hear my words, which walk in the imagination of their heart, which walk after other gods to serve them, to worship them, shall even be as this girdle, which is the same repeated now as in verse 7, it is good for nothing. It's good for nothing. No good. Now we'll go back, taking mar, to be marred. And we have the word, little verb in verse 7. The girdle was marred, destroyed, brought to ruin, reduced to ruin, corruption. And verse 9, I will mar. So God is the author. God is the author of allowing this. So it's God's illustration. God is sending Jeremiah all the way to the Euphrates to help put the message across. The message wouldn't be any good if it was down in Jerusalem or near there. That wouldn't get the message across. Where are you going to end up? Where are you going to end up, Israel? You're going to end up in Euphrates, Babylon, and you're going to be like that linen garment, rotten. The reason you're there is because of your pride. And that's why you're going to go there. Now, to put that together a little bit better, over if you would, to get the flavor of this, over if you would, please, in your Bible, to Genesis. Genesis chapter 6. In Genesis chapter 6, picking up, please, if I may, going. Remember, this is the Noahic. Remember, how long did they have? 120 years. Build the ark. And they had 120 years to see the sign of the ark. And the, Noah's building it, a preacher of righteousness. He's doing the right thing, and they're all doing the wrong thing. Now, are they paying attention to the ark? Are they paying attention to Noah? Is anyone going to stop and ask and say, Noah, maybe we need to fix our relationship to God? No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Now, where are they headed? The ark, they're headed to the flood, and the ark is going up, and all they are going down, drowned. That's the judgment. They have notice. The ark is there, giving them notice. 120 years. Everyone pay attention. No one's paying attention. Now, so here's our little words. Corruption, mar. Genesis chapter 6, verse 12. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. There's your word. For all flesh had corrupted, there's your word again, his way upon the earth. And, verse 13, God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and I will destroy them with the earth. I will destroy, mar, bring them to ruin. So here's the Noahic flood, and that they had the warning. But didn't profit them at all. It was to no profit. Now, over if you would please, to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy and chapter 4. And if I may, remember the warning, the assignment, Israel's great commission to be a testimony to all the nations of the earth, and his warning to them. And in verse 15, a little bit of the context. Take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for you saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Mount Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Could you see anything? Could you pinpoint God? Face, nose, arm, hand. There was nothing to see except fire and brimstone. That's all. You did not. I have. I'm not like you. And do not make anything. Think of the Ten Commandments. Don't make any images, anything of anyhow, in any way, shape, or form. Don't do it. So now, verse 16. Lest you corrupt yourselves, there's your little word, mar yourselves, and make you a graven image of the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female, etc. So, now, Deuteronomy again in chapter 31. This is the last book Moses writes, Deuteronomy, the last year before they crossed the Jordan. And here in Deuteronomy, chapter 31, if I may, and picking up, in verse 29, verse 28. No, you'll appreciate better. Verse 27. You get it. For I know thy rebellion, thy stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? In other words, it didn't make any difference whether I'm here or not, said Moses. You do what you do anyway. Verse 28. Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, and I will speak these words in your ears, and call heaven and earth to record, bear witness against them. For I know that after my death, you will utterly, utterly corrupt. You will utterly corrupt. You will utterly corrupt yourselves. turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. So Moses did everything, 40 years in the wilderness. Did that get him ready? Well, not quite ready, because everyone by then has died. Of the 20 years old and older, I don't think many would be alive in those last hours, days. And so now, here's this group. They're going to go with Joshua, and for many reasons we did that. They're going to go, but they're going to end up in the book of Judges. Everyone does that which is right in his own eyes. So each time you get a little preparation, a little warning about what does it profit. It's no good. There's nothing good going to come out of it. Hang on. Chapter 32. And in verse 5. They have corrupted themselves. Their spot is not the spot of his children. They are a perverse and crooked generation. In other words, there's no visual sign. If you came from that family, you should have some evidence that you are from that family. And there's no spot on you that you came from me. I look at you, there's no mark that I did this. Wow. Now, having said that little bit, over to Hosea chapter 13. Hosea and chapter 13. And picking up, if I can, in the light of all of it, in verse 6, according to their pasture, so were they filled. They were filled, and their heart was exalted. Therefore have they forgotten me. Verse 9, O Israel, thou hast destroyed, there's your word corrupt, to destroy, to bring to ruin. Thou hast destroyed thyself. Now, who made life so miserable for you? You did, all by your lonesome. When you get saved, you aren't supposed to go and have the world fixed and everything fixed around you, and you're supposed to fix it all. And your lifestyle in the heart, healthy, happy, holy, that is there. And it has nothing to do with you trying to fix the world around you. So you're going to try to fix everything and do everything, and you violate what? Work out your, Philippians 2:12, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You forgot. So you're looking that all of this is against you. Listen, you're in the world, the dark world, think of 6 o'clock hour. We're in the world system. And God saves you in the world system. And here you are. And the reason you're going to have a loss, which we'll see in a sec, I hope, you'll see that what's missing, the reason people end up with nothing. It's their own doing. And it has nothing to do with family, friends, job, health, wealth, anything. It has to do with your heart looking to God. Chapter 13, Hosea, verse 9. O Israel, thou hast destroyed thyself, but in me is thine help. I will be thy king. Where is any other that may save thee in all thy cities? And thy judges, of whom thou saidest, give me a king. Remember they did it, 1 Samuel chapter 8. Give me a king and princes. I gave thee a king in mine anger, King Saul, and took him away in my wrath. I gave you what you wanted. You were better off never asking, pestering, God, leave us alone. That's what the tribulation is, isn't it? What's the tribulation? You're trying to tell God, stop nagging us. Leave us alone. No more grace than wrath. And God said, all right, I'm going to leave you alone. Now watch what happens. Take away the authorities, the police, the firemen, and all of the military. And boy, think of the chaos. Now, so God, here we are looking, and pride, remember Proverbs 16, pride goeth before destruction. And so, God, here we are looking, and over in back over to Jeremiah chapter 13. Verse 11. Now, remember, the verse 10 is you guys are guilty as can be. Now, what was the problem? What is the message? Now, for as the girdle, the loincloth, verse 11, cleaveth, that means to be glued, to adhere to. It would be used of Leviathan skin and scales locked on. Think of an alligator or something. Leviathan isn't an alligator, but think of that. And everything is locked on. It is used, this word you're looking at, cleave. It means the skin, your skin, body, cleaves to your bones. If I held my little skeleton up, you aren't like that. Because your flesh and blood cleaves, is glued to your bones, to your bones. That's the word, glued. The two, Genesis 2, the two shall be one flesh, cleave to one. Now, so here, in verse 11, as the girdle cleaveth to a loin, and it's right next to your skin, it's wrapped around your skin, tightly, rightly, around your skin. So now, that's dear, and so, God said, have I caused to cleave unto me the whole house of Israel, the whole house of Judah, saith the Lord. I caused them. They did not glue themselves to me. I glued them to me. I did it. They don't get any credit for it. I'm the one that brought Israel near me, close to me. Think of Exodus 19, 5, 6, 7. They are my prized, high, precious people. They are people above all people of the face of the earth. I did that. Over to Deuteronomy chapter 7. God made them close. And just to very quickly, Deuteronomy 7, verse 6. For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep his oath, which he had sworn unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, after the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, go over to chapter 9. God, you did it. Israel didn't do it. No, God did it. That's how you got saved. You didn't save yourself. God did. God initiated the whole thing. So God, it's your doing. That's right. I didn't get it. I didn't make it. I just understood that you did it for me. Deuteronomy chapter 9, and picking up in verse 4. Speak not in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness. In other words, don't be saying it, that we're pretty good people. Speak not thou in thine heart after the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord doth drive them out from before you. They are worse than you are. That's why the Philistines and Jebusites and Hivites are all being driven out. They're worse than you are. You're going to go in, but you aren't good guys. But I have a plan for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that plan prevails. That's why the linen girdle is buried by the Euphrates. I want you to know I'm going to do everything I said I would, and it is going to be exactly wonderfully as I said. There's a wonderful, awesome tribulation, but there's a wonderful after effect. Now, Deuteronomy in chapter 9, picking up please, verse 5, not for thy righteousness, not, or for thy uprightness of thine heart, dost thou go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, that he may perform thy word, which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand therefore that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it, for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. Verse 7, remember and forget not how thou provokest the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness from the day that thou didst depart out of the land of Egypt until ye came into this place. You have been rebellious against the Lord. So God, it's all about you. All about you did it. Over to chapter 13 in Jeremiah. God, you're the one I have caused to cleave unto me. I'm the one that did it. So God, you did it, and then we didn't accept it, we didn't receive it, we didn't do it well. And you did it for all of Israel, the whole house of Israel, verse 11, and the whole house of Judah, saith the Lord, that they might be unto me for a people above all people of the earth, for a name, my nature, my property, you represent my purpose, my position. Think when you got baptized. I baptize you in the Matthew 28:19. I baptize you in the name, singular, of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. His name. Israel, you represent his name. Believers, we represent his name. Now, and not only that, people, you'll be for a name, you'll be for a praise, the word for praise, to shine and show forth, to shine out like a big light, and then to say forth, show and sign. So the see and hear. Israel, see Israel, hear Israel. See and hear them. Now, thus, and not only that for praise, but for glory, for excellency, for beauty. God, you're going to do something wonderful for them to give them the wonderful opportunity to be so distinguished, to be so excellent, to be so awesome as a nation. No other nation like them. Now, having all of that wonderful, wonderful advantage, you then go to the very last five words. And you're going to read in verse 11, but they would not hear. They did not want to hear. They just didn't want to do it. Didn't want to hear. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful things to hear. But they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear it. That's history, isn't it? Does anyone want to hear the good news? That what? We're sinners, like you shared Sunday, and we need to be saved by grace? And we're glad. We're glad. We unashamedly. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and we make God a liar. So we have no problem with that. No problem. That's where we are, in the grace of God, saved. And the testimony to all angels, good and bad, we're going to give it to them. Now, in the light of that, over... Over, if you would please, to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Remember now the last statement, verse 11, they would not hear with the ear. God just told them, I put you around I brought you close to me like the linen, and wrapped you around myself straightway right next to me. So where I was, you was. Wow. Now, I did that. And in doing it, you became most special. A name, a glory, a praise. Wow. A people. But you didn't want to do that. But that was my plan. And I told you right up front that if you would hear, the trouble is you don't want to hear that God has such a plan. What has God said? Hear ye my son. Listen to him. Deuteronomy 28, verse 1. And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently, do you see that there's two verbs, hearken diligently. And when you do that, absolute, what have you got? Most intently, intensity, certainty. If you shall hearken, if you will certainly do this, listen, have an ear to hear. Unto the voice of the Lord thy God, verse 1, to observe and to all his commandments which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth. And verse 2, and all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken, there's your word, hear, hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Well, you're not listening to me, said God. I have all kinds of stuff to make happen, but it isn't going to happen if you don't listen to me. And if you don't listen to me, you're going to be like that linen girdle. Good for nothing. I created you for an awesome purpose. Now Israel's purpose is awesome. Your purpose as a believer in the body of Christ is more awesome than Israel's by many degrees. Do you understand that? Now, the church is all excited being so awesomely chosen, right? Wrong. No, they aren't. They ought to be. But they aren't. They aren't. They don't have any ear to hear. Over Psalm 81. As you know, Psalm 81, please, picking up, may I go just to pick it up a little context, verse 7. Thou callest in trouble, I delivered thee, I answered thee in a secret place of thunder, I proved thee at the waters of Meribah, Selah. Hear, there we are, they would not hear. Hear, O my people, and I will testify unto thee. What are you going to say? O Israel, if thou will hearken, listen to me. There shall no strange God be in thee, neither shall thou worship any strange God. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. Now that's an arrangement. Now, and just think of the little birds, when you have the illustration, little birdies are all doing what they do, and pretty soon there'll be little birdies, and the littler birdies will all sit there and wait for mommy birdie or daddy birdie or a raven or a hawk to come and feed it. And so here they come, and they're there. What are they going to do? They're little birdies. And they can't go anywhere. They can't fly. They just open their mouth. And they didn't say, well, has that been approved by the FBI? Has that been approved by everybody? I mean, are there any carcinogens in it? Is that the word? That kind of stuff? Is there anything bad in it? Is that what little birdies do? They just open their mouth. They trust their mother, the father. God said, listen, I told you to trust me. Open your mouth wide, and I'll fill it. That can't be true, can it? Therefore, verse 10. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. And that word will fill is intensive. Intensive. It isn't a calm verb. It's an active verb. It's p-a-l, p-a-l. The intensive, tensive, full of energy, full of diligence. Woo! Wow. That's the word. I'll fill it. Here I am, God, in your presence. That's right. Now, God, I'm trying to get it for us and us and for me. Now, and thus, verse 11, but my people would not, oh, there's our word, they would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would have none of me. So I gave them up to their own heart's lust, and they walked in their own counsels. God, are you concerned? But we're too stupid to know the world system is. We don't want to listen to you. Oh, that my people had hearkened, there it is, unto me, O Israel, and walked in my ways. I should have soon subdued their enemies, turned my hand against their adversaries. The haters of the Lord should have submitted themselves unto him, but their time should have endured forever. And he should have fed them also with the finest of the wheat and with honey out of the rock, which should I have satisfied thee? Now, if they just opened their mouth wide, God said, listen, I have choice things for you. I have wheat, I have toast and jelly. I have it all. Now, you have to be smart enough to trust me. And it can't, but you better. See, because no one else seems to do it. And that's why we're headed smack into the tribulation. Now, you aren't going there, I hope. But that's where we're headed. And we're going to see all kinds of stuff going on that you would never dream could happen before that happens. I hope it's soon by that. I hope he comes before we finish. And then you can all forget everything I just told you, because it won't matter anymore. Anyway, trust you got a little bit. It's an awesome thing. God has made us his prize. God, we don't want to disappoint you. God, you blessed us with your Son. So, perhaps you have a particular prayer request as we go to prayer.